Richard Serra is widely considered to be the preeminent living American sculptor. He's had two major retrospectives at the Museum of Modern Art 20 years apart, most recently in 2007, and his monumental works are in museum collections all over the world. Some of his most recent work is now on exhibit at two branches of the Gagosian Gallery in Chelsea on 21st and 24th Streets until January 25th. It is with great pleasure that I welcome Richard Serra back to our show. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, these sculptures are all dated 2013. Did you make them specifically for the show?
Yes, but one of them, the one on 21st Street, has been in production for about 3 years, and it's an older evolution. The pieces on 24th Street all have been in production only for the last year and a half.
Now, the ones on 21st Street are your oxidized steel curved walls structures. You've called them Inside Out. Is this part of the torqued ellipsis series, similar to the pieces that we saw at the MoMA exhibit in 2007?
It's an extension of that series. It's kind of the end of the sequence of those pieces. It's the largest of those. And it's taken 3 years because there's 16 plates involved, and there was a lot of tooling that had to go on.
Well, it feels massive in this interior space. Did you design them to be ultimately placed outdoors?
Actually, I made both shows with the spaces in mind, so they were pretty much geared to these spaces.
There are narrow passages that feel like canyons that lead to interior spaces inside this piece, and at any time there are a lot of people walking through and around them. Is it important to have viewers engage with them?
I think that's what they're about. I think they're about walking and looking and becoming implicated in the space as you experience the space. There's two connected interior volumes, and then there's two volumes that you enter into from the outside and exit from the outside. But I took a person through yesterday, and when they came out, they didn't know what part of the room they were in. And then I said, why don't you just go back through and I'll meet you on the other side? And the person actually refused to do it because she was so disoriented. That's not often the case, but it does happen.
Well, there were, on the afternoon that I went there, I saw several school classes that had come to see your work. And the kids were having a wonderful time figuring out where they were at any given time. But is this meant to refer to architecture?
No, I think what happens, and it's the reason for the disorientation, is that if you think of a plan on the floor and you think of an elevation overhead, the elevation moves at a different rate than the plan. So what's going on overhead as you look up isn't the same as what's between your legs as you're walking. So you're always implicated in trying to catch up with the space as it pulls you through its openings and passages.
How did you come upon that idea? Was it
just
by accident?
It started just simply by trying to figure out why to make a curve, and I got into curves because I didn't know anything about them, and I realized that if you look at a curved surface, one side's concave and completely open to you, and if you walk around, it's convex, and you can't understand where it's going to end, and just that simple unknowingness sparked my curiosity to engage me to see what I could do with them. And I think probably one of the very first curves I did was Rotary Arc down here in Lower Manhattan.
The one that eventually was dismantled.
No, not Tilted Arc.
Oh, that's
Rotary
not Tilted Arc. Oh.
Well, but actually, Tilted Arc and Rotary Arc came pretty much at the same time.
Do you begin with a drawing or a maquette?
Maquette, usually. Inch to a foot.
Are they difficult to fabricate since they're so large? Does a piece have to be brought into the gallery in sections and then welded in place?
No, they're not welded. Each piece in this, there's 16 plates. Each plate is freestanding on its own, and then they adjust the butt. Oftentimes, we put a little key on the top of them to hold them together so that they don't flex inward or outward. But every plate in and of itself is freestanding. That's true of all the pieces I make.
On the other hand, the other exhibit has been described by some people as a polar opposite to what we've just been talking about. The ones that we've been talking about, they kind of have a velvety, crusted, curved steel feel to them. The other ones are these massive, monumental, solid gray slabs.
Well, the reason that the piece Inside Out at 21st Street is rusted is that when they're fabricated, you have to use a break, and the break leaves incrustation lines on them. Then they have to be sandblasted. Once they're sandblasted, then they go through an oxidization process. After 8 years, they'll turn dark, dark brown, but the mill scale's taken off when they're sandblasted. The pieces on 24th Street have the mill scale still on them, so they're this blue-gray color, which I prefer, actually.
Well, all the pieces are described as being made of weatherproof steel.
That means that in 8 to 10 years, it's quartet, and they'll turn a dark amber color, like the Seagram's building, and then they'll cease to oxidize, and they'll hold their color. So I don't get very involved with the fact that they look like autumn right now, the one on 21st Street, or they go through colorations that people can, you know, make a metaphor to Rothko. That I know that in 8 years they're going to be dark brown, and I just have to deal with that.
That the slabs are four sculptures made of blocks of steel ranging from 9 inches to over 2 feet thick. I never thought you could do steel that thick. Is this a new direction for you, or is this a continuation of work that you used to do earlier in your career?
I haven't done plate quite this thick. I've done 6 and 7 inch plate. The plates, the 24 plate piece has a 9 inch thick plate, and the 7 plate piece has an 8 inch plate. That's probably the thickest weight I've used in plate. And the forge pieces, I've done bigger blocks. I've done blocks that are 4.5 feet, 5.5 feet, 6 feet square. So I've done very heavy blocks. Those blocks together, the two pieces juxtaposed and inverted, they each set weighs about 36 tons. But I've done pieces heavier.
36 tons?
Yes. Well, the if you take the 7-plate piece, each plate is 40 feet long, 8 feet high, and 8 inches thick. Each plate is 51 ton, and they're freestanding, and they just butt up next to each other. And that was a stretch for me because I'd made an earlier piece called Pessoa, which was 10 feet high, actually, 8 inches thick and 30 feet long. And when I made that piece, I thought, and it was freestanding, I was quite moved by my own work. And that it was almost like a prime object for me. And it implied something that other works hadn't. And I thought, well, maybe there's a possibility of extending this. And so after doing one 30 feet long, I thought we could probably push this to 40 feet. I could probably lower it to 8 feet, and I could probably figure out a way to make the forms that would create volumes between them. So we started making models for the gallery.
And what was it about that piece that moved you so?
It's hard to put your finger on. There are things that have an internal relationship because of their geometry and their weight that bespeak to you and your bodily relation and movement to it, that it's hard to discern a metaphor and language that would be comparable to an experience or a sensation that you're having that links to other things. But Pessoa literally wasn't what I thought it was going to be. It fulfilled a need in me to understand that there was a possibility of just doing a single work that bespoke of a sentiment that I was interested in.
My guest is Richard Serra, who has two concurrent shows at two locations of the Gagosian Galleries in Chelsea. Could you tell us about a piece, the other piece that obviously is meant to evoke emotions, Grief and Reason for Walter? I'm assuming it's dedicated to the wonderful sculptor Walter Di Maria, who just passed away recently.
When I first came to New York, I did a show with Dick Bellamy at the Godolsky Gallery, and there was two people other than myself at the show. It was Walter Di Maria and Mark DeSouvreau. And I didn't know anyone in New York. New York was like a big traffic accident for me, or it was like a fortress where I'd hang out in my studio. And Walter actually took me aside and took me to Wittenborn's bookstore and took me to Schraff's, if you remember Schraff's, and more or less laid out what it was to be an artist in New York and how it was to fit in, and pretty much told me, look, you don't have to join the crowd. You can hide out in your studio, and you can do your work, and you can be private, and that's okay. And he was very kind and very open, and Walter wasn't an outgoing person. He was with the Velvet Underground at the time. He was a drummer. But his personality was almost one of a receding, shy, introverted man. And I've known Walter all my life, and I was quite sad when he died. And I was building this piece at the same time. And the piece has a kind of perspectival, generic form, which looks like a sarcophagi. I mean, that's the subtext. I wasn't making sarcophagi. It's just two blocks that are inverted that happen to have the same dimension. But once the piece went up and I was thinking about Walter, I thought, why not dedicate it to Walter?
But there is a sense of monumentality in many of these works, which almost seems to refer to ancient steles and obelisks and arches.
I think this piece more, this set of pieces, these blocks, Grief and Reason, more so than any other. And also the title is taken from On Grief and Reason by Joseph Brodsky. And in the one poem that's taken from Frost, On Grief and Reason, it's actually about a woman looking out the window at a burial mound of her child that's been died.
Where will these works ultimately wind up? Mostly in museums? In outdoor spaces?
I have no idea.
Well, one of your early sculptures is located in a field near Toronto, which was recently bought by a developer. And I don't know what they plan to have for the site, but that the local town council voted to have the piece designated a cultural heritage site.
It's become a cultural heritage site, and I think they fought it for about 10 years. I didn't get involved with it. I didn't want to get in the middle of it. And it was just a group of indigenous people of that community and that county that fought for it and thought it was particular and relevant to their concerns, and so now it's become part of their heritage. That's unheard of in this country.
I understand that when you were asked to create a sculpture for a museum in Doha, Qatar, you felt that the best site for it was in the middle of the water. What happened? Did they build a platform?
No, I actually, Ayanpei asked me to come to look at the Islamic Museum. And his Islamic museum is out in the water away from the Esplanade. And he had dug up the earth to build his museum and planted it at the end of a half-moon-shaped walkway. And he asked me if I would be involved with building some sort of park or what could be done out there. And I said I could possibly build a pier out into the water across from the museum to connect the museum to the pier. And at the end of the pier, I could build a piece. And I built a piece with 7 plates, 80 feet high, with an aperture that you look out at the sky. And the space that you're standing in is 10 feet across, and the space you're looking out of is 9 feet across. So it's a very high vertical shaft. And there's 3 triangular openings that you look out of.
We have a wonderful slideshow on our show page of some of the pieces in Richard Sierra's new sculpture show at 2 Gagosian Galleries in Chelsea, but you really have to experience them in life. The 2 galleries are 555 West 24th Street and 522 West 21st Street. They run until January 25th. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you.